Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Thanks for listening to the Primetime with Isaac and Souk. I'm Isaac, the cool one.
What? This is our podcast.
Yeah. Welcome to our podcast.
I don't know. It's brought to you by Les Schwab, though.
Yeah.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
The following show may contain adult themes not suitable for children.
Shut the hell up.
Club 1080 with Isaac and Souk.
It does go well with a chicken.
Club 1080 on the Fan is brought to you by Better You Today Weight Loss. Here's to a better you. Embark on your weight loss journey now at betteryoutoday.com. Hit get started today, and here's to a better you.
I didn't know hanging out with you was making me smarter.
Full disclosure, Morty, it's not. Temporary superintelligence is just a side effect of the mega seeds dissolving in your rectal cavity.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And once those seeds wear off, you're going to lose most of your motor skills, and you're also going to lose a significant amount of brain functionality for 72 hours, Morty. Starting right about now.
At the club, Club 1080.
Do I, guys? The era has become. This is much ado about not a whole lot of nothing.
This could be really cool. Let's not make it not cool, okay?
Well, my.
So I am going to touch it because I have balls. What they have in their loins.
Ahoy!
All right, if you've been watching Tiger King on Netflix, we've got a little special treat for you, right, meow, to kick off the club. We have on the line, and by the way, this man has been double booked. I think you will hear him on the Fan again tomorrow on our midday show.
He's in demand.
But Souk scooped him.
That's right.
This is Robert Moore. He is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, On Trails. He spent 4 years reporting a podcast miniseries about the life of Joe Exotic, which is available now from Wondery, called Joe Exotic, Tiger King. Robert, hello.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. I wonder, everybody's talking about this Tiger King thing because of the Netflix doc. Does that piss you off a little bit that nobody knows that, well, people know, but that this has gained such mainstream accolades?
No, it doesn't bother me too much. I mean, we did very well. We were the number one podcast in the iTunes store for a while. We got, 5 or 6 million downloads, and it's getting made into a TV show. So I'm not complaining about how the podcast did.
All right.
Now, when how did you first come about this? Because you said it was like 4 years in the making. How did you first stumble upon this?
Yeah, so I first stumbled upon it just through a random newspaper story in the LA Times. It said Michael Jackson's alligators burned alive in zoo fire. And I clicked on the story and thought, well, that's kind of odd. And then in the story, it mentions that the zoo belongs to this guy named Joe Exotic. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd, Joe Exotic. And so I Googled Joe Exotic. And then, if you guys have ever done even a Google image search for Joe Exotic, that's all it takes to fall down the rabbit hole. So
totally.
I had a friend who was working at a big men's magazine, which I'm not going to name. And I pitched in the story, and he said, yeah, go down there, check it out. So I went down for a week. Joe was very gracious. He gave me a trailer to live in, and I followed Joe around for a whole week. And over the course of that week, his obsession with Carole Baskin became very quickly apparent, to the point where at the end of the week, he was saying things like, that he had an AR-15 set aside to kill Carole, that he dreamed about seeing her brains on a wall. And so I was like, this is intense. There's a story here. But the magazine in the end ended up killing the story. They didn't want it because there's no shape to it. You know, there's no story. It was just a guy in Oklahoma. So I kind of waited, and I went back 2 years later. I visited Joe again. I went and visited Carol a bunch of times and interviewed her. And then once Joe got arrested, finally I knew I had an outlet for the story. So I pitched it to New York Magazine and did a big 10,000-word article for them and the 6-piece miniseries podcast for Wondery.
Okay. All right. So what years were you there with Joe?
So 2015 is when I first went down there. That's right after the Zoo fire. It was still just like a scorched patch of concrete. And then I came back in 2017 in the winter. And then I came back again a couple of times in 2019 for the trial. 2018 and 2019. Okay. So I've seen it under Jeff Lowe's ownership as well a couple of times.
So you watch this thing, and it's hard to believe that it's real. And you're like, God, how much of this is being played up for TV? But I was listening to some of your podcasts. This sounds authentic, that this is just – this was all reality. This was not for TV. This was as crazy as it seemed.
Yeah, it's hard for me to explain it to people because oftentimes I'll be telling someone the story of Joe Exotic and then they stop me and they go, is this like a novel that you're writing? And I have to remind them, no, this is true. All of this happened. I mean, there are people who exaggerate. Joe, for example, is a liar. He's a pathological liar. He'll lie to your face. He lied to my face many times. He told me he was dying of cancer, told me he had bone marrow cancer, you know, and I felt terrible. I felt like I felt legitimately sad that this guy was going to die. That was a complete lie. And to a certain extent, Carol is a liar as well. I mean, I caught her out in a couple of really strange lies. So, you know, there's not a lot of consistency among their stories, but all this stuff really happened, and these people really exist, and they're all very big characters.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk, for the people who have not seen it, don't know what we're talking about. Joe had a zoo in rural Oklahoma.
Zoo's a strong word.
Well, that's what they called it. Yeah. And he had tigers, and he would sell the cubs and make money, and he became the showman, and he's openly gay, and there's all that element of it too. But Carol is more of a rescue. She called herself a rescue. She does the same thing that Joe does in terms of charging people to come and see her animals, but she claims she's rescuing them, whereas Joe is exploiting the trade. What did you find is any difference between the two? I mean, they both ended up hating each other because Carol's trying to shut down Joe and Joe's trying to shut down Carol. But what is there a difference between the two? Is Carol good and Joe bad, or can you trust none of them?
There's a couple of key differences between them. First of all, you know, they did have a feud. They both disliked each other. Carol never threatened to kill Joe. Joe tried to get people to kill Carol all the time. I watched him do it. He would try and plant the idea in people's head so that one of his crazy followers would go do it. And he tried to do that for years before he actually paid a hitman to do it. And I'm sure we can discuss that later. Yeah. But the key difference between the two places, and I'll agree, Carol's place is not the nicest place on earth. You know, there's rusty looking cages. You know, there's weeds and stuff, and the enclosures aren't that big. But the key thing is she doesn't breed them, okay? So when you breed these tigers for cub petting, you are creating a whirlpool situation where you're creating more and more tigers that are cute and cuddly, and you can legally pet them from 4 to 12 weeks. But after that 12 weeks, you have a tiger that is roaming around, and you have to do something with it. So you either sell it to someone, which means the tiger ends up in a backyard cage, which happens all the time, or you kill it. You know, or you end up doing what Joe did, which is basically you start hoarding them and you end up with 200 tigers in a zoo, which you have to feed, which is very expensive. So you have to breed more tigers and you end up in this like feedback loop. Carol never breeds tigers. In fact, she's trying to pass a bill to stop the breeding, mm-hmm. the private breeding, the sale, the private exhibition of tigers. That's her main cause. But you're right. She does charge people money to go see tigers in cages. So in that way, I guess you can say there's an equivalency there.
Okay, but wait a minute. And that's kind of what the undertones of it all, at least just watching the documentary, is that Carol seems like a pretty good person, but then there's that whole thing about, oh, she may have killed her husband and fed him to the tigers. Like, what do you think of that? Did Carol murder her husband, or what is your thought on how that all went down?
I cannot comment on that. People ask me that question all the time, and I can't. I mean, just for legal reasons, I can't comment on that because, you know, that's a very dicey thing to accuse someone of murder when they've never even been named a suspect in a case. You know, but I will say there's a lot of suspicious evidence that doesn't make sense in that case. Mm-hmm. You know, there was, as it was laid out in the documentary, there was the van that was found, which was parked at an airport. Apparently the seat in the van had been pushed farther back from the gas pedals than Don's height. So that didn't make sense. Then that that van was left in Carol's custody for a couple of days before the police collected it to do any evidence search on it. There's other stuff they didn't mention in the documentary. There is the fact that Don's signature on his last will and testament, his power of attorney, doesn't match the signature on the restraining order that he filled out against Carol, saying that he was afraid of Carol. There's also another restraining order that, so she had a boyfriend a couple of years after Don, who was named Jay Baikal. He filled out a restraining order against her as well. And in that restraining order, he says he's afraid of her, she carries guns, and that she had mentioned that her husband was killed and that they were digging up a nearby property. And she said, I hope they don't find bones there or I'll be in big trouble.
Oh, my God.
Which is a strange thing to say. No, none of that adds up to she definitely killed her husband. But what it does add up to is that there's a lot of odd pieces in this puzzle and there's not enough evidence yet. So I think what people want, especially Don's children, is for the police to start pursuing this case again. The case was never closed officially. It's still open. They just stopped pursuing it. Hmm. Maybe with the attention from this Netflix thing, they'll pursue it to its conclusion.
Like it's, I was going to ask you, what's the strangest part about this whole thing? But each one is more bizarre than the other. Joe's a gay man and he was married to three straight men. One of them killed himself, but not on purpose. And then his first husband, I was reading through some of your stuff that isn't mentioned in the Netflix documentary. He's in jail for murder now as well, but for a different murder.
Yeah, this whole story has a quality I like to call fractal weirdness, which is the more you zoom in on any one detail, it gets stranger and stranger and stranger, and it never stops. But actually, what's interesting is that guy that you mentioned was not Joe's first husband. That was Joe's second husband. Joe had another husband before that husband, who was his very first husband, this guy by the name of Brian Ryan. And it's actually quite an interesting story because this was back when, before Joe had a zoo, he owned a pet store in Dallas. And he and Brian was openly gay, unlike a lot of Joe's later boyfriends and husbands. He was actually openly gay. And they apparently had a really good relationship. He's a really sweet guy. They, you know, lived in a trailer together. They had poodles. They ran this pet store that was sort of a gay-themed pet store. And they had, like, a good little life together. Then Joe went and opened this zoo. And at the same time, Brian died of complications related to HIV. And according to a lot of people, it broke Joe's heart. I mean, he basically died in Joe's arms in the parking lot of this hospital. And people told me that after that, Joe changed. He basically, someone said, you know, that day Joe Schreibvogel died and Joe Exotic was born. You know, this guy who was obsessed with attention and money and power started to come to the forefront. And this guy who really loved animals and was about rescuing them fell away until by the end, there was no Joe Schreibvogel left. It was all Joe Exotic. And then he starts dating these straight guys. He picks up this young guy, J.C. Hartpence, who is later convicted and imprisoned, not just for first-degree murder, but also for sexually molesting a young girl. I mean, really a nasty character. And then he finds all these other young guys. He brings them in. They usually worked on his staff. He'd bring them in, and he'd convince them to live with him.
Okay, good grief. all right, so we're talking here with Robert Moore. He's the author of a book called On Trails, and he spent 4 years reporting on Joe Exotic. His podcast is available on Wondery. It is called Joe Exotic, Tiger King. Okay, so and then a lot of people are talking about this Joe Exotic guy because Tiger King has come out as a docuseries on Netflix, which you can check out, and you should. It's unbelievable. What is it about the exotic animal trade? I mean, we're talking about all these characters. If you watch the docuseries, there's another guy named Doc Antel who seems as creepy as any of them.
He's got a sex cult.
And yeah, he's like this mystical, he's a doctor of mystical science, and he just seems like he's just a smarter version of Joe.
And he's like a Rajneeshi or something.
Yeah, he's got that. And then you've got some drug kingpin who used to hide drugs in snakes. I mean, what is it about the exotic animal trade that attracts all of these deadbeats?
Yeah, I don't think deadbeats is the right term. They're eccentric people who are drawn to extremes. I think. I mean, you have to think about the psychology of someone who wants to own a pet tiger, right? Because you could own a pet cat, and you could love that cat, and that cat would love you back, and that cat would never kill you in your sleep, ever. Tigers are different. People who like tigers are different. They're drawn to that danger, and they are kind of repelled by, like, normalcy. They want to be exotic. They want to be strange. And so the through line among all these people in this documentary is that they're drawn to that, and that's how their lives take this, like, really grotesque, colorful character, I think, is because they're always drawn to the extreme thing. When they have a safe choice and a dangerous choice, they take the dangerous one every time. And it makes their lives take the strangest courses. All of them, Jeff Lowe, everybody in the documentary, Alan Glover, James Garrison, they're all kind of like that.
That's a great point. Is Jeff Lowe still got that zoo, and is he still trying, or did he build the new one?
Well, as far as I know, and I've been a little bit out of the loop for the last couple months, but as far as I know, he's still running the GW Zoo. He shut down his Facebook page, so it's harder to keep tabs on him. But he's still running that zoo. He has not built the new one. He and that guy, Tim Stark, had a falling out, and I think the funding kind of fell apart. Mm-hmm. So as far as I know, that place has not been built yet. If you want to go visit Joe Exotic's old zoo, it's still there. It's still open. I wouldn't necessarily encourage you to, like, give your money to that operation, but if you're, you know, really curious, you can go down there and see it. It's in Winningwood, Oklahoma.
Let me ask you this, because obviously, it alludes to it quite a bit of meth. How prevalent was meth? Because it seems like this is all fueled by it.
Yeah, that was my first impression when I showed up at the zoo. You just get, like, a very strong meth vibe the moment you walk in the door. There's a lot of employees with missing teeth. But then again, it's kind of hard to tell, right? Because, like, for example, a lot of people had scabs on their arms and holes in their clothes. But you think, well, maybe that's from the tiger claws. Wow, yeah. You know, maybe that's not from the meth. Maybe he got headbutted by a camel and his tooth fall out. But then later, so after I spent that first week at the zoo, I interviewed, like, many dozens of former employees of the zoo, and they started to tell me, yes, meth was prevalent among the employees, and Joe was on meth. I mean, you know, you can see he twitches his nose a lot. He's got a lot of the kind of characteristics of someone who's either been doing coke or meth. I don't know if that comes across the documentary, but it's very clear in my time with him. And he often gave meth to his boyfriends. So one of Joe's favorite things to do when he, you know, wanted a vacation, is they would go to this motel called the Havana Inn, and he and John and whoever would hole up there and do meth and have orgies for, like, days. Invite people in. That's how he liked to, you know, decompress.
Romantic. Okay. So you got there just at the time when they had the fire. He burned that down, right? Because of all the footage that was in there that he didn't want released.
Yeah, I mean, that was a mystery up until basically until this documentary came out. I was not 100% sure. There's footage in this documentary that makes me 100% sure. There's two pieces of evidence that are really clear, because previously it was like Joe was accusing Rick Kirkham and Rick Kirkham was accusing Joe. And it was a little bit hard, but my suspicion was that Joe had done it. The key pieces of evidence are two. One is there's a point where Jeff says to Joe on one of those taped recordings, which I don't think is in the documentary, but it's in the podcast, where he says, why don't you just burn it down the way you did the tiger, the tiger studio or whatever. And Joe says nothing. He doesn't respond. He doesn't deny it. And then in the documentary, there's footage of him going into the lawyer's office and the lawyer basically planting the idea in his head. I don't know if you guys remember that, but the lawyer says, I mean, it's amazing. That piece of footage is just such an incredible, I really have to take my hat off to Eric and Rebecca. It is such an incredible get. There's so many moments like that in this documentary where you think, how did they possibly find that shot? And the reason why is because they had everything. They had all of Joe's footage. They bought his computer hard drives. So they got not just all of his footage, but all of his text messages, everything. They had everything of his that he'd ever shot over his entire career there. And he shot a lot of footage.
Interesting. Wait a minute. So the documentary guy that was filming the documentary behind the documentary that was in the film, his stuff got all wiped and he said he didn't back it up. You're saying all of that stuff was somewhere else, or this is just additional footage that Joe had because he filmed everything?
No, I have heard multiple people tell me that they believe Joe took some hard drives out of the studio or had someone do it before they burned it down. And he hid the footage to lead Rick to believe that it all burned down so Rick wouldn't come asking for it.
Yeah.
And because later footage starts emerging and people say, wait, that was supposed to have been on those hard drives. That should have burned up in the fire. There were other things that he apparently wanted to dispose of that ended up in the fire. You know, it's all very suspicious.
I got it.
Were you ever scared? there's some serious stuff going on. Were you ever fearful of your personal safety?
The first time I was there, I wasn't that fearful because I didn't really know enough to be fearful. I mean, Joe was very fast and loose with guns. I saw him shoot at one of his employees' feet one time, like not at his feet, but at the ground near their feet to kind of make them hurry up because they were moving too slow. So that was one thing. Just the guns made me nervous. But the next time I came back, in between, I talked to all of his employees. One of his former employees told me, and this is more or less an exact quote, he said, you need to be careful because they have a system set up down there for death, meaning that they oftentimes would take a cow or a horse and kill it and feed it to the tigers. He said, you could be shot, slaughtered, and fed out to the cats in 15 minutes. That was something that made me very nervous the next time I went back to the zoo, because then I go back in 2017, and Jeff Lowe is now there. And Jeff Lowe and Joe, this was during that period where Jeff and Joe were together at the zoo. And I was interviewing Joe, and Jeff was standing there with this cold glare just watching me the entire interview. And it's the middle of winter. There's no one in the zoo. I am alone in this zoo with, you know, in rural Oklahoma. That was a chilling moment. That was a moment where I thought, I need to really tread lightly here.
Interesting. So how long is Joe in jail for?
He's in jail still currently because they haven't transferred him yet. But he's been sentenced to 22 or 23 years in federal prison.
Okay. And I saw somebody said today, he filed like a big old $94 million lawsuit or something claiming.
Yeah, he's filing lawsuits. He's filing appeals. He's trying to claim that the whole investigation was corrupt. It's in my opinion, a very shaky. The evidence he has is very shaky. It's not going to hold up in court.
So the guy he paid to kill Carol,
an FBI guy.
Well, no, it was the right hand man of Jeff Lowe, who hated.
That's right. Yeah, there's two guys. Oh. There was Alan Glover, who was Jeff's right-hand man, and then there was the FBI agent. But he never actually gave money to the FBI agent. He just sort of gave him instructions.
Well, he gave money to Alan, and Alan was never going to kill Carol because Alan hated Joe.
Okay, so this is where it gets interesting, because the documentary leaves out a really key piece of information. So Jeff hated Carol also, right? They both did. Jeff told me when I interviewed him that he hated Carol. He thought she was the devil incarnate.
Okay.
So they both had a reason to want to see her gone. Now, Alan told Jeff in that recorded phone call that you heard in the documentary, he says, why would I want to go to Florida? I never go to no Florida. However, when he was on the stand during the trial, he said that he did go to Florida. He told this story. He said he was in South Carolina. He decided he wanted to warn Carol. So he got in his car. He was drunk and high on cocaine. He drove all night down to Florida, ended up on a beach somewhere near Tampa, ended up passing out at, like, drinking with some random people and passing out at their house, and then woke up in the morning and drove all the way back, which makes no sense.
Okay.
And the only thing I can rationalize about it is, in fact, he probably did go down to Florida, and as he said, he chickened out, that he had intended to kill her. I mean, this is a suspicion, but this is where the evidence leads you to believe, is that he actually got a lot closer than you think to killing Carol.
Wow. All right. And that's why Joe's in jail. You can't do that. No. So last question. I know this is running way too long. I really appreciate your time. Why is that bill not passed? That seems so obvious. What Carol's fighting for, this trade to be shut down. What is the holdup on that?
I've never gotten a straight answer on that. I don't know. It's not really, it doesn't seem like a political, like, left versus right type of issue. You know, I mean, Joe and his followers tend to be pretty right wing, and they argue that this is like a basic American freedom. Like, Joe would often say that if I can afford to feed an elephant, I should have the right to own one. That's my right as an American. I think that's kind of absurd. I think most people think that's kind of absurd, especially when it comes to a deadly animal like a tiger or a lion. I'm not quite sure why that hasn't passed yet, but it seems like it probably will one day, just because its day has come. I mean, you shouldn't be selling tigers. You shouldn't be owning tigers in a cage in your backyard, in my opinion, and I think in most people's opinion.
Yeah, makes no sense. Well, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for the insight, and keep up the great work, Robert.
Thank you so much, guys.
That's Robert Moore. His book is called On Trails, New York Times bestseller. And if you want to hear more about Joe Exotic, he did, before this Netflix docuseries, he did a podcast about Joe called Joe Exotic Tiger King, and it can be found on Wondery.
I started digging into the podcast yesterday and today, and it goes into more depth
than
the Netflix one, and I highly recommend giving it a whirl.
And by the way, let's say this. Let's say you just tune in and you're like, I haven't watched it. I don't know what all this is about. Watch it tonight.
Yep.
And then Robert is actually going to be on Dirt and Sprague show again tomorrow.
Yeah, we double booked.
So everybody's talking about Tiger King. And as you can probably tell, even if you haven't watched it from that interview, it is bananas. It's truly bananas. And
there's really no way to describe it.
Buckle up, Buttercup. You're in for a wild ride.
Yeah. Well, the idea that there are more tigers in captivity in the United States than there are in the wild in the world, that is a loophole that needs to be closed. And this
owned
is why,
by these idiots.
Yeah, these are the people that are in the trade. And Carol is, there's one reason why I think Carol's actually got good. She comes across as good in a sense that she's the one in DC fighting to get this stopped.
To stop the breeding of it.
But for some reason, it isn't.
Nope.
It's,
it hasn't happened
yet. It's still the Wild Wild West. All right, 626 on the Fan.
Club 1080 with Isaac and Suk.
Sitting on a cloud of judgment, handing down life lessons to all the sinners.
Club 1080 on the Fan is brought to you by Better You Today Weight Loss. Here's to a better you. Embark on your weight loss journey now at betteryoutoday.com. Hit get started today, and here's to a better you.
Double Sun Power!
All right, well, it's now time to break again.
Yeah. Well, there's no way that we're keeping that to one segment.
No. And we...
Well, we kept it to one segment.
We did.
Yeah,
a little long. A little long.
Blew through a break.
A little bit long.
You broke 1 minute before the second break was supposed to happen.
But honestly, you could have asked... We could have asked an hour's worth of questions and still only scratched the surface.
We could have done a whole four-hour show with it.
So, if you go follow his... let me pull up his Twitter.
At Robert Moore _.
Yeah, and Moore is M-O-O-R. He did a little thing. He did a whole thread because, you know, people were talking about it, and he chimed in, was chiming into some discussions. Last night, if you go back through his Twitter feed, he did like kind of a little bit of a Q&A, and he mentioned that Joe Exotic had faked bone cancer, right? That he was dying or whatever. And he has a photo on there. And it turned out that he was dehydrated and had herpes. So, like, there's a photo that Joe was passing around about, like, you know, with open sores on him, and he said that he was dying of cancer. And nah, he just was dehydrated from a meth binge and had a really bad outbreak of herpes. Just all kinds of these weird little things that he's thrown in there that I'm sure you couldn't put into just the Netflix documentary, but he goes in depth in the podcast. But yeah, it's a really interesting Twitter follow where he did, like, I think he did 15 things that were true about Joe Exotic that you didn't get in the Netflix documentary.
All right. Anything else?
I feel like we just brought this up and I totally forgot about this part. He ran for president.
Yeah, I thought about that.
And governor.
And he actually got some votes.
Yeah.
For the governor.
They for say the governor, 19, not for president.
Wouldn't they say 19% or something?
Something like
he
that.
He was third in the race.
Yeah.
He was third in the race, which explains a lot, ladies and gentlemen. Need I say more? But
you couldn't make a story like this up.
The one thing about, so Carol, so I keep going back to Carol.
Yeah. And Carol, if you
she's
don't know,
fascinating.
Carol's the one that's got a big cat park in Florida and exploits the cats, but at least doesn't breed them and is trying to get a bill passed so you can't breed and sell exotic cats.
And she's like a social media maven, and all her videos have millions of views and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. She's the one that says, hey there, all you cool cats and kittens.
Yeah.
It's Carol.
Hey.
The big cat rescue.
Boy, she's creepy, and you don't trust her, really, but she is by far the most trustworthy person in the film. That's not saying much.
No, it's like being king of the dip-asses.
The only thing I keep going back to about her, and her having killed her husband and fed him to the animals.
Which is a real possibility.
Which I didn't know that thing that Robert just told us about, how she's said, if they dig up bones, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, if you go through that Twitter
feed. That's pretty.
That Twitter feed that I was talking about actually has the, the PDF of the restraining order that the other boyfriend filed against her, where he says that in the.
Okay.
The restraining order.
The only thing I keep going back to is that the guy, the ex-husband who went missing, and she ended up getting all his money, told one of his buddies, and he's quoted in the documentary as saying that he told him, if I can pull this off, it'll be the slickest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
Right. I remember that.
And no one really knows what that means.
And he never saw him again because he disappeared. So, and there's literally no physical evidence of his death.
Nope.
With her pointing to her. So it's like.
There's just a lot of suspicious things that point to her.
Certainly suspicious, because she ended up getting all his money. She broke into his trailer and got his will and literally just changed it, which is also weird
and
that you can just do that.
She changed it so that the word disappearance was in it.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
In a result of death or disappearance.
And nobody, and the lawyer's like, I've never seen disappearance in one of those ever.
He goes, I've been doing this for 30 years. I've never seen it. But, and then because his body's never been found, he just disappeared. Pretty convenient that was thrown in there. Oh, and by the way, the signatures don't match up.
And the airport he went to was only small planes, and they said that he was trying to go to where, Belize or Mexico or something? Oh, Costa Rica. And that there's no way that kind of plane could have made it to Costa Rica without landing at least three times to refuel.
Look, someone killed him, right? I mean, it just...
Well, he's definitely dead because after 5 years, there was no sign of him, and they pronounced him dead, and they gave all his money to her.
But what is that, this will be the slickest thing I ever do?
Right.
What is that?
That's what I mean. What if he just
gave
her...
Was he planning something, and then she killed him instead?
All I know
what if he just gave her everything? He was like, I don't, just keep it. I'm going to Costa Rica. He had a girlfriend down there. He said the exotic animal trade down there, the laws were way more relaxed.
I don't think they had any laws.
So that's why he was going there. Maybe he's just like, look, if you let me get the hell out of here, you can have my stuff. I'm leaving. And maybe that's how it happened.
Yeah, because that's more likely. That he gave up all his worldly possession and has managed after all these years to just disappear with no one knowing anything about it.
I just don't think she did it.
Or the fact that she killed him and took his money.
I just don't think she did it.
Oh, country mouse.
I really don't.
So naive in the ways of the world.
I don't think she did it.
Did you see how unemotional she was when she was talking about him?
She couldn't have given an F.
There were interviews with her about the death and she was just like,
oh,
totally stoic.
And by the way, we also need to point this out. The way they met, okay? So this dude, the Carol and the husband that disappeared.
I forgot about that.
I can't even begin to tell you how just at every turn how badass crazy this is, but this is how they met. So he's worth somewhere between $7 and $20 million, right? No one really knows how much. He's kind of a weird dude, but he's got millions upon millions of dollars. Carol is 18 years old. And she is with someone else and they get into a physical fight and she runs away from an abusive relationship and she's walking down the street, middle of the road in like Tampa or whatever, no shoes. He pulls up in his car and says, hey, I'd like to give you a ride. And she says, no. He circles back three times saying, I'd really like to give you a ride. No. Then he produces a gun and says, here, you can hold this gun on me. And that way, if I do anything, you can shoot me. At that point, she gets in the car and they go to a motel and have sex. That's how they meet. That's how they get married. That's the beginning of that romance. Mm. And you're trying to tell me that that she didn't kill him? Okay.
She was horny.
Yeah. Hey, I know I've tried to pick you up walking the street three times, but what about this gun? Absolutely. Let's get in. Hey, you want to go to this hotel and have sex? Yep. Yeah, I do.
I think there's one thing I'm still really curious about, and it's I'd like a deeper dive on Bhagavan Doc Antle.
Yeah.
No question.
The sex cult.
One, he literally is running a cult.
Yes.
A sex cult.
Sex
and
cult.
He doesn't really hide it at all.
No.
Two, Carol's kind of running a cult because she has all these tiers of volunteers and you have to do certain things to get this color shirt.
Yeah, no one
to
pays.
Wear, and nobody is paid.
No.
And then so was Joe Exotic basically running a cult.
Yes.
Because he would get people who were out of jail and had nowhere to go. He's like, hey, come work for me for $100 a month.
I swear to God.
And live in this trailer that's infested with rats.
Apparently,
they're literally all cults.
Apparently, if you have a tiger, if you have a baby tiger, You can get anyone to do anything.
Apparently,
as long as you can cuddle with a pet tiger.
But I wanna find out more about Antle.
No question.
Because his place seemed so, for lack of a better word, legitimate. It was pristine. It seemed like it was run in a different way.
He was just a smarter version of Joe. Yes.
But he also got his place raided, as they said at the end of the documentary. Yeah. Yeah. His place was raided.
But it didn't really say why.
But we don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, that dude seemed sinister.
And he named
as
himself Bhagavan.
Yeah.
So he's Rajneeshi.
And he's an open polygamist.
Well, they showed the Rajneeshis in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And Shaq is buying tigers from him, so is Mike Tyson. If you ever want to know where Shaq and Mike Tyson buy their tigers, hey, give you this guy.
All right, that's enough of that.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that like haven't even seen it. They're like, stop talking about this show I haven't even seen.
Yeah.
But you need to watch it.
It's unbelievable.
It's called Tiger King. All right. The latest high-profile COVID-19 cases. Two of them. Next. Here's Mike.
Club 1080 with Isaac and Sue.
I'm going to kick some butt. I'm going to drive big truck on the roads. Road. I'm going to kick some ass. I'm going to rise. I'm going to kick little ass. Rock, flag, and eagle.
Club 1080 on The Fan is brought to you by Better You Today Weight Loss. Here's to a better you. Embark on your weight loss journey now at betteryoutoday.com. Hit get started today. And here's to a better you.
Double sun power!
All right, we have two more high-profile cases of coronavirus. Names you may know.
Again, it's a celebrity, so they won't be affected by it.
Some people are saying that Idris Elba, like, they're calling him out for faking it.
What?
Yeah, you know, internet.
Would Idris Elba fake it?
That's kind of what he was saying, but...
Okay.
You know how internet does.
Seems like a weird flex, but hey... Whatever. Who would have thought that Jesse Sommelier guy or whatever would fake a lynching? But he did that.
That's right. Great point.
But I don't think Idris Elba needs the press. He seems to be doing just
fine.
Or
maybe he does.
Oh, career's a little slow right now. Hobbs and Shaw didn't do that well.
Prince Charles has it.
Yeah, I saw that. He said he's got a bad cough.
And Prince of Wales.
And he's pretty old, right?
71.
Okay. So more of a high-risk group.
Yeah. And he's next in line for the throne after the queen croaks.
You know what? Can I tell you that I kind of forgot the queen's still around.
Yeah, she's still kicking, man.
How old is the queen?
Oh, she's in her 90s.
I mean, that's... I think Prince Charles... I mean, it is the mom, but...
93.
You think Prince Charles is like, God...
Yeah, I think he is.
Like, I've been waiting a long freaking time. What the hell?
What if he goes in and he, like, coughs all over?
he's bringing mom in close. Well, you figure, you know, when 20 years ago, when she was in her 70s, you know, and he was still, you know, kind of out there doing his Prince Charles thing, he probably was like, hey, any moment now, right? It's mm-hmm. like, I'm going to be king. And then a couple years go by, a couple more, and, like, on each birthday, he's like, you son of a bee. Is waiting around.
And the other one is Jackson Brown.
I didn't see Jackson Brown.
Yeah, the great Jackson Brown
running
has
on
it.
Empty, huh?
Yes, he is literally running on empty.
Yeah, no.
He says he's doing fine, but he's he got it because so he's let's see how old he is. He's also 71. How about that? Prince Charles and Jackson Brown, same age.
Jackson Brown looks much better than Prince Charles.
Dude, Jackson Brown is the man.
Yeah, great artist.
He says he doesn't know how he got it. But he thinks he got it when he was in New York City. He was down there or over there for a benefit concert recently, and he thinks he brought it back from there.
One would think.
He's in LA now.
I mean, if you've been to New York, right, in the last month or two, I mean, it is kind of the epicenter of everything.
Yeah. And our own Mike Lynch is just going to waltz right in there next week.
Have fun with that, you and Jackson Brown.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
We'll see what happens.
They say the. I sense some trepidation. They say the big, you know, the spike in the U.S. is going to be in 2 to 3 weeks.
No,
the
country's going to be open. What are you talking about? By the way, best Jackson Brown song? Go.
Ooh. I got to go back and look here. I had a Jackson Brown phase in my life.
Yeah.
And well, so I need to go back and
you
look.
You probably should have had a Jackson Brown phase in your life. It's fantastic.
Jackson Brown, by the way, used to write songs. Well, I guess I wrote songs for the Eagles as well. Like, yeah. Was that same sort of... In fact,
he was their mentor.
I think he may have... He wrote one of the big Eagles songs. It might have been Take It Easy.
He wrote Take It Easy.
Take It Easy.
That is correct.
As I say, he wrote... That's his song. I knew he wrote a big one for them.
So Running on Empty's great.
Well, there's so many good ones. You got Lives in the Balance.
The Pretender.
The Pretender.
I was never a huge fan of Doctor My Eyes. I'm looking through his list.
These Days is really good.
Lawyers in Love.
Fountain of Sorrow.
I don't know that one. He's great.
There's only one answer.
Is it Running on Empty?
No. Mike, would you...
One answer according to you?
One answer according to me.
All right. What is it?
I have my favorite. It's For a Dancer.
Let's hear it. Do you have it?
I'm not sure I'm allowed to play it.
Oh,
really? We're in that?
We're a radio station.
Well, yeah, but we
How
got...
are we not allowed to play?
We got yelled at for playing stuff that was not allowed to be played.
We did?
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I think we have to pay royalties.
Yeah.
And, can we play
and
like...
God forbid a radio station play music.
Can we play like 25, 30? Can you play the intro?
Sing it. I want you to sing it.
That's the last thing anyone wants. I mean, you are the songbird of our generation.
If I knew it, I'd sing it. I don't know which one that
is. I'm blown away that we can't play Jackson.
There's a lot of Jackson Brown songs sitting in here, but there's only one that's in a safe range, and it's Somebody's Baby.
Really? Yeah. Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Yeah. We can play this one because it's in, well,
and
technical
this,
jargon.
And this is a, it's an insult to Jackson Brown, but all I think about when I hear this song is Fast Times at Ridgemont High and The Point.
Yeah. It's a good tune.
Wasn't this written for the movie?
Boy, I don't know. But I just picture, is it Jennifer Jason Leigh? You know. I've seen that with Ron from Stereo World.
Bum, 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 bum. What do you say is the number one song? What song do you say?
For a Dancer is my favorite Jackson Brown song.
For a Dancer.
Yeah.
I'll check that out.
I, too, went through a Jackson Brown phase.
Surprisingly, that's not even in our system at all.
Big fan.
For a Rocker is in our system. Did he do an album where he did songs for different people?
She's got to be but we're still not allowed. I love that this is the only Jackson Brown song that we're allowed to play. We can't play Running on Empty, The Pretender. No.
I mean, I could save it in myself and we could play it, but in terms of what's in the system, no, we cannot. We got yelled at by corporate.
Yeah. I love that corporate's listening to what we're playing.
F yeah, I'm gonna go home and rock some Jackson Brown tonight.
Absolutely. It's like, well, when Kenny well, I guess he's not dead, but when Kenny Rogers died, right? You had to take a lap around Kenny Rogers' greatest tunes.
Damn right. All right, John wraps it up next on The Fan.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip.
This is Mailing It In with Big John Sicanic on 1080 The Fan.
Big Bad John.
Hey, what are you doing?
You know Jackson Brown has the same birthday as me?
No, that's
no,
great.
Why not?
That's a great shared birthday.
Yeah. What?
What?
What are you talking about? That's, yeah, we said it was great.
Oh, the music's still playing. Usually it stops. I couldn't hear you.
This we can play, hey. But apparently we can't play For a Dancer. Someone saying 10 of the Fan can't spring $12 for Pandora?
The answer well, to that question is no.
Somebody's Baby's his best song. Quit trying to be eccentric with a deep cut.
That's not a deep cut.
It is compared to Somebody's Baby.
You're only saying that again because you think of Jennifer Jason Leigh's boobs.
Okay, well, okay, listen, here's the question. So you said we think he wrote Take It Easy, correct?
He did write
Take
It Easy.
Yes, he wrote that.
Okay, universally a great song.
Yes.
Everybody, right?
Yes. Great tune.
Okay, so what is the proper level of credit? Like, it's a great song because the Eagles sang it, but he should get some credit for writing it. What is the proper credit distribution between somebody that wrote a great song or in the people that performed it?
Ooh, it's a good. I'm going to go 70-30 Jackson Brown because if you ever hear Jackson Brown sing it, it's just as good. He just gave it to them.
Glenn Frey helped him write it, though.
Well, yeah, I guess the story is that they lived like above each other, and he heard Jackson Browne writing it and came in and was like, oh my God, that's amazing. They finished it up, and then he gave it to the Eagles. I'm still saying 70-30 Jackson Browne.
What do you think? Like, I liken it in sports to like a coach calls the play, but the players execute the play. So is that, like, how much credit does the coach get for calling the play, even though he had nothing to do with executing
it? Are you saying this song in particular or just in general?
Well, I mean, this song in particular, but in general, like, again, that's a good question, because, like, if I met the band that sang an awesome song, I'd be like, oh my gosh, you guys, oh, I love that song. If I met the guy that wrote it, I'd probably be like, oh, that's cool. But
it's definitely over 50-50 in favor of the writer.
Yeah, because a lot of people can sing a song.
That's right.
But you see, like Elton John, for instance, like Elton John sang great songs and he wrote the music, so maybe that's not fair. I think a better one would be like Sinead O'Connor, her big hit is Nothing Compares to You, right? That is what she is universally known for, and it's a great tune, an all-time great. Prince wrote that. Prince could write that and give it to 1,000 different singers, and it would have been a massive hit. And Sinead O'Connor, without that song, isn't known. That credit is like 80-20 Prince. A lot of people can sing it. It takes something special to actually write it and put together the melody and everything that goes along with it.
But you can also sing it horribly.
Well, sure.
Yeah. Like, so does the credit scale slide depending on, like, that situation? Like,
I think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's different.
I think there's a sliding scale.
Yeah, there's no question. Because Take It Easy, Glenn Frey was in on writing it. Jackson Browne started it. Glenn Frey loved it, added to it, and they performed it. I mean, Glenn Frey, you know, even though I don't want to give him credit for much of anything, he was a big part of that song.
Sure.
Come on, Smuggler's Blues is a great song.
We all know that when that band broke up, that that Henley had the last laugh and was like, yeah, look, it's only one of us has a career here, boys.
The Glenn Frey solo career is bizarre compared to
his own. The H's O.
Beverly
boys,
Hills Cop.
The H's O.
Hey, that's a great soundtrack as far as movies go. Beverly Hills Cop, you could do a lot worse.
Don Henley has the Boys of Summer, and Glenn Frey has the H's O.
Yeah.
Advantage Don Henley.
Glenn Frey just seems like such a cheese D, you know? Yes. But then when he's with the Eagles, he's awesome. So it's just odd.
On the way home tonight, just cue up Smuggler's Blues, and you'll thank me.
I know the song.
I know.
I had the Glenn Frey album. I remember.
Listen to it again. It's got a little something for you now. Just listen to it.
Well, John, you listen to For a Dancer and realize that is indeed his best song. It's not even close, and it's not a deep cut.
I'm going to watch Fast Times right now. See you guys.
All right,
that's the only reason John says that's his favorite
Fast Times.
Is from Fast Times, and he's thinking of booze.
I really feel like Running on Empty. It might be his best song.
See, and that's fine.
I mean,
come on. I can do
that's
that.
That's an iconic song. Now, some people may look at that and go, well, that's...
It's the big hit.
It's low-hanging fruit, but that song...
It's a much better song than No Offense. You got to be someone's baby.
Hot Corner with Harrison Lynch is coming up next. I see Joe in there. He's growing his hair out. Looking good, dude. We are back tomorrow, 3 to 7 on The Fan. Good night.
Friendships of Spain. Friendships of Spain.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.